Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
All right, you're back with Greenwash. I'm Jaspreet here with Don. And today we've got a guest you might be familiar with from the Fourth Estate. This is Catherine Ennis-Carter, a public management consultant who joins us from Wellington. And Catherine's had a long history in centre and local government, both as a public servant as well as a consultant. But her career has taken her around the world. And Catherine, I'll try to reel off some of that. Pacific Islands, Southeast Asia, Armenia, Jamaica, Pakistan, Turkey, so on. And you have worked in policy, public sector policy, policy reform, poverty reduction, strategic management, budgeting, the works. So welcome on, Don, and I are thrilled you could take some time to join us this morning.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to join Greenwashed.
It's good to have you here. And today we were thinking, you know, we're going to make use of your immense career and immense wealth of information to talk about a subject that seems to pop up with startling frequency over the last few years, especially disinformation. We seem to be hearing about this at every level of government, local government, center government, and even these NGOs. Right down to the stage, we have now kids in schools in New Zealand, and I have no doubt in other parts of the world, being told how to identify disinformation. So any initial thoughts from you on this? How have you seen this coming along?
Well, I think it's an area that I've become quite fascinated with, and I've started to delve into this, starting off with the misinformation and disinformation approach that was being taken as part of the whole COVID implementation, and you know, really became kind of very obvious. That's when the whole terminology about misinformation started to become even people, you know, the general public started talking about misinformation. And now what's interesting is that this whole concept of misinformation and disinformation is popping up in all sorts of areas. And particularly what I've started to become very interested in is how it's manifesting into the whole discussion on climate change. And it's really interesting because you can see exactly the same process happening. And I've started to think quite a lot about how the imposition of various agendas, you know, which may arise either from kind of top-down, you know, influence or from bottom-up causes, you know, that get taken up by various influencers and agencies and advocates and activists, and then they, you know, get into the public service and they're advocating things, and next thing, you know, it starts popping up as policy. So I'm quite interested in how these concepts for various things, and we can range across climate change, the public health staff, other woke agendas that are coming into place. And what you can see is that they're all following the same process of, you know, agendas or ideas get promoted, and there's always some kind of strategic problem or issue that they are purporting to solve. And then a solution gets identified, then it gets promoted, you know, into policy actions. And then what's happening now is that on a range of things across the spectrum, you're starting to see this whole concept of mis and disinformation coming in. And it's coming in as part of the whole process of getting people enrolled in, you know, these various ideas or agendas or policy actions that are being developed and coming into place. And, you know, I find this really interesting in terms of the intersection between psychology and sociology. So my academic background was in social sciences. And so I find this really interesting now, because what you're seeing is how this concept of misinformation and disinformation is being used, and the psychology and the sociology that sits in behind it, in terms of creating social norms that then create this impetus for getting everybody enrolled in certain solutions, certain policy actions, and therefore certain agendas. And this whole concept of mis and disinformation is being used as a way to deflect and oppose any alternative theories.
So what you're effectively saying is that they're using this in a way to develop public policy and get people aligned, get them on with the whole agendas here. Now, you've had a decades-long career, Catherine, at some of the highest levels of government. Was this ever the role of a government to even poke their noses into stuff like what do people believe in, or what are they talking about? What is the latest flavor of the month? What is the public talking about? You've spent your lifetime doing public policy. Was this ever the government's role before this?
Well, I think what started to happen probably over the last, because the concept of, using misinformation, disinformation in a public communication strategies didn't really become manifest in a very overt way in terms of the general public until we saw what happened with COVID. But prior to that, you can look at trends that have been evident over, say, the last 20 years. And probably the starting point was when we started to be aware of what we used to call spin, being put on the promotion of certain government policies or ideas or actions, and we started to see that, I think, over the previous 20 years, it became more and more aware. And a significant change that started to happen, particularly in New Zealand, but all over the world, is that in conjunction with the reforms that we had under neoclassical economics, and I'm talking about New Zealand now, that whole imposition of the economic dogma associated with neoclassical economics involved, the repercussions of that were huge across the public service. And basically what we saw over the subsequent 10 years was that there was a lot of transfer of public sector activities and operational activities to the private sector, through contracting out and all these things. And so the public service position started to change. And what, like in the 1980s, for example, most people employed in public service positions were in operational activities.
Yep.
And then what we have now in government is armies of people who oversee procurement and contracting with the private sector, and armies of policy analysts and armies of communication specialists. Most government departments have more people employed in so-called communications now than they ever did before. And basically, it's all about the creation of spin. And so now we have a more insidious manifestation of that with this whole misinformation concept. And what's interesting about it is that academically, there's now, and I've only over the last few years started to become aware of the significant amount of academic funding that's actually going into all this stuff about countering misinformation, disinformation. Even the definitions of mis and disinformation, weren't kind of out in the public arena, but they are now. And so this has become an insidious tool for actually, the people who promote these things would talk about, education and communication of the public. But when you get to what's actually taking place, the whole concept of misinformation is being used as part of the whole process of enrolling people in agreement on certain policy actions and agendas. And so it's basically, I mean, one thing that's important to talk about it is that this is actually really a bogus concept. And, you know, because it starts from the assumption that there is a body of truth or correct information, and everything else is, you know, like alternative science, alternative theories, alternative opinions about anything that's kind of comes within the whole gambit of what could be termed the new orthodoxy, is, you know, any alternatives to the conventional wisdom or, you know, the current science or the official narrative about anything is being labelled as misinformation. And of course, if you do that, then you can actually weaponize, you know, the denigration of any opposition, which is what we see happening. So people who are coming forth with alternative opinions about anything or alternative facts or whatever are being labelled as, you know, purveyors of mis and disinformation.
So Catherine, wouldn't you just... It has to be that the new digital age has enhanced the speed with which this can happen compared to, say, prior to 1939 or prior to 1915 or whenever there's been other big events happen in the world that have been sort of significant. Would you agree that the growth of the digital age has just put this in, it's sort of sped up the way that this can influence and deceive quite quickly? They can build their army a lot quicker than you could have by having foot soldiers, say 50, 70 years ago.
Absolutely. And I mean, just the, you know, the digital age has given us speed of communication and messages that, you know, we didn't have before. But basically, you know, this again is about using this concept, and I talk about, you know, it's become weaponized now. Because, you know, what is so insidious about it is that, you know, when people talk about countering disinformation, they make it sound like, you know, what they're talking about is rampant nutters on social media putting out, you know, wrong information and wrong facts and you know, influencing lots of people on social media. But of course, what's never talked about is what's actually happening is that, you know, the work of many academics on the stuff about countering so-called mis and disinformation is actually techniques in maximizing propaganda. And when that gets to be aligned with what the government is doing, then, you know, we're all the way into these very sinister pathways into totalitarianism.
Oh, completely. And I saw an example of recent example of this, which I'll bring to the listeners' attention in case someone's missed this. So Rural Contractors, a Facebook page, put up this post a couple of days ago that said that. And last week, we had Bryce McKenzie, co-founder Groundswell, on Greenwash, where he spoke about the fact that he was heading to Wellington for the Primary Industry Summit. So it seems that Groundswell leader Bryce McKenzie has been challenged at the Primary Industry Summit to take responsibility for disinformation spread on the group's Facebook site. In a panel discussion on duplication, division, and disinformation, how can we unite our rural communities? I can't believe, Dawn, that this was a session at the Primary Industry Summit, a panel discussion on duplication, division, and disinformation. And the AgriHQ CEO, Dean Williamson, said that a lot of farming leadership had to spend a lot of time responding to disinformation on Groundswell's website, and this was a waste of their time. Now, my instant reaction was, how dare they?
Yeah.
Is Dean Williamson saying that he's a single source of truth? But then you and I have faced this. We've had Byron Clark do an article on Substack on us on the Fijua Dispatch last year, calling us the new faces of climate change denial who are emerging, you and me, as the world moved on from COVID lockdowns and vaccine mandates. The freedom movement is pivoting to climate change conspiracy theories. And but isn't that what the so-called disinformation project has done? They popped up during the COVID issue, and here they continue.
Well, absolutely. I've started to think about overt hypocrisy a lot recently because, you know, you've got, you know, and a lot of people who are mouthing this stuff, they don't seem to actually have any internal hypocrisy monitors. But, you know, they, I mean, that's a very interesting case, and let's look at two aspects of that. The first is that, you know, they are saying, oh, you know, they're trying to label Groundswell as conspiracy theorists. But, you know, that's what they're doing themselves because what they're trying to counter is Groundswell has come up with, they've been doing two things, which is, you know, one is questioning the science on which, you know, about CO2 emissions and methane emissions in particular, on which a lot of these rather crazy climate change policy actions are based. So they've, you know, they've been trying to look at alternative opinions on the science. And also, secondly, challenging the results of some of the policy actions that are now being put into place as a result of everybody being locked into that theory. And so what I'm interested in is, you know, the fact that during the COVID years, we had all this stuff about conspiracy theories and, you know, anybody who said, who gave
anything to the contrary, you had to tar them with the same brush.
Anything to the contrary. And if you didn't say, you know, that the mRNA vaccine was completely safe and wonderful, you were branded as a, you know, anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist. So now, having learned that approach and the effectiveness of using this misinformation tool, you know, to weaponize and to denigrate any opposition, you know, they talk about morphing from, you know, the public health stuff into climate change. They're doing exactly the same thing. So all the techniques that we saw under the COVID implementation, we're now seeing popping up in relation to climate change.
100%. We've seen Michael Baker, you know, who was a COVID modeler, now heading the Public Health Communication Center. I don't even know why when you don't even have adequate public health, why do you need a communication center? Sort your hospitals, the practical stuff first. But there he is, heading that one, talking about how fossil fuels, which I actually disagree with the term, Dawn has corrected me, should be called hydrocarbons, how hydrocarbons are a menace to human health in New Zealand. Though Michael Baker often forgets that the country did have a name called New Zealand. It's often Aotearoa, or sometimes you might add New Zealand Aotearoa to it. But this is how these people work. They have found another gravy train to latch on to keep themselves relevant, to keep their careers going. Meanwhile, they don't care about what the fallout of these policies are. They never cared about the adverse events that happened due to the mandates that were forced by the government. I know people still struggling to get ACC after 2-3 years, being gaslit by, you know, doctor after doctor after specialist, that it's all in your head, or maybe it was already prior, these issues. And we are now seeing that same dystopian outlook towards climate change. And what's making it worse is, just like we had influencers, and, you know, I'll never forget that song, Vaccination, which had all of these people jiving to the tunes. We are now recruiting people, be it the Tuhatua to Climate Disinformation Night School, be it Al Gore's climate, what does he call it, the Climate Reality Project, be it School Strike for Climate. At every single place, they are now recruiting people to force them into this groupthink, and then send them out in the world to convert others. What nonsense is this?
Well, you know, they've found a tool, you know, an effective tool. And, you know, you say, well, why do you need a public health communications centre?
Yeah.
Well, if you're wanting to promote a lot of propaganda, then you do need it. And as I said before, you know, I've been surprised to find over the last few years just how much money internationally is going into these academic programs on countering misinformation and disinformation. There's all these, you know, techniques that are being promulgated for doing that. But the purpose of it is simply, I mean, nobody used to talk about misinformation and disinformation 10 years ago. If we thought about what sensible labelling or, you know, naming of things, you know, you might talk about alternative
views, difference in viewpoints.
Yeah, alternative opinions, alternative science. You might even use the word dissident. But this whole thing about the very term misinformation labels, you know, it groups up everything that you don't like, or that, you know, the commentators or the activists or the government officials don't want or don't like, whether it's in the form of facts which can be used to present a different scientific scenario, or just straight out opinions, can be labelled mis and disinformation.
And you do wonder, for those of us that are getting a bit long in the tooth, where the heck the truth went to in the world. Was it ever here? I'm starting to be cynical that the truth on issues of substance was ever here. And this is just another phase we're going through. We're going to have to grow through it. We're going to have to get the respect for fellow man and woman back somehow, because this is so divisive when you have this supposed distrust all around us. I mean, I've just read an article today that was from the Global Investigations Editor for DSMOG. He says, and DSMOG's the climate alarmism sort of stuff. Anyway, yeah. We are witnessing the systems that sustain life on this planet literally being dismantled in front of our eyes. And we are part of the immune system that is arising in response. So the little army, the little troopers in DSMOG, they're part of the immune system that is standing up to beat the virus of the climate change deniers back. I mean, why do we have to be this pathetic? It is pathetic. And I'm sorry, I'm being a bit rough, but I want to call a lie, and I want to be able to say that's the truth. And currently, we can't seem to get anywhere close to that.
Well, I think, you know, as I said before, the reason that this is bogus, you know, because it rests on the assumption that there is such a thing as the truth. Mm. And, you know, if you think about where we've been on all this in the last few years, you know, as I was saying on the Fourth Estate program yesterday, you know, the fact that Jacinda Ardern stood up on the podium of truth and said, "We are your single source of truth," that, you know, in previous years, you know, like even 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago, that would have been enough to strike terror into the hearts of every decent journalist, academic, you know, and even most of the general public. And now it goes unquestioned. And I think, you know, we've got into this stuff. Perhaps it started with all the, you know, the dialogue about fake news and whatever. Mm. And I know from look now, because I've started to look into this stuff about mis and disinformation, that actually in academic circles, you know, it has been around and being worked on and being thought of, you know, as an academic concept for quite a lot longer than, you know, than when we really became aware of it, which was during mainly during the whole COVID years.
And I'm glad, Catherine, you are doing this work, because listeners, we hope to bring you a couple of more discussions of a bit more nuanced on this whole climate disinformation discourse that's emerging. Catherine has done a bit more in-depth deep dive into this, as is her wont. And with her background in public policy, I have no doubt she'll have some interesting sound bites for us in the coming weeks. But Catherine, thank you so much for joining Dawn and me today. We'll have to wrap it up at that. We're running out of time. But this was, yeah, this was certainly interesting. And as I was telling Dawn off air earlier, you know, Dawn, the day you and I make it to the DSmog database as one of the purveyors of disinformation, we know we'd have arrived.
We'll have our badge. We'll get a badge. I'm sure they'll give us a badge or something to stick on our jerseys. So, yeah, look forward to it. Look forward to it with pride.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us, Catherine. We'll see you again in a week's time, hopefully.
You're welcome. Great to talk to you. And I look forward to traversing the climate change mis and disinformation in more detail.
Should be fun. Can't wait. Goodbye.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.